Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Friday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joe, a massive weekend in our city on the college football front. Vanderbilt taking on Missouri in a top 15 matchup. College game day is in town. And by the way, like I said, pregame beginning at 1 o'clock on 102.5 The Game, kickoff at 2:30. Vanderbilt football brought to you by Gary Force Acura, Jimmy Kelly Steakhouse, and Smoky Mountain Tops. Joe, it's a huge moment for Vanderbilt and their fans. You know, there's an excitement level around the program that is unprecedented in my lifetime, probably unprecedented in your lifetime, most people's lifetime, when it comes to this football team and this football program. Now, let me be clear when I say what I'm about to say. This is not like they're playing, you know, MTSU or some other school that they should win, you know, by 2-3 touchdowns by in this game. It's Missouri. It's a top 15 matchup. Vanderbilt's a 2.5-point favorite in the game. So, like, the idea that Missouri could come in here and win the football game is not some crazy thing. So I want to start on that and be clear. Like, they're a good team. It's going to be a good game. But when I ask this, I'm kind of talking about this is a huge test for Vanderbilt in terms of, yes, the quality of opponent, but also the circumstances, right? Like, you got college game day in town. You're the darling of the sport right now. There's a lot of attention on you. And look, it doesn't, like, we see it. The players see it. Everybody sees it. The path to the college football playoffs right in front of them. Like, if they handle their business and end up with, like, one more loss heading into the Tennessee game, they're going to be in pretty darn good shape when it comes to the college football playoff. So can they handle this? Can they handle this moment that they just really, as a program, don't have very much experience being in, don't have any experience being in? Joe, what do you make of that as they head into this matchup against Missouri?
Yeah, no, look, it is a big challenge. It's just obviously something very different for Vanderbilt. Clark Lee is dealing with things that he just hasn't dealt with. It's things you want to deal with. You, of course, very much want to be in a position where you have to deal with, okay, let's not get overconfident. And yes, there's this huge big picture thing that we're in, but you know, if you don't focus this week, then it's going to get blown up. And so, like, it's hard for me to believe that, I mean, they just beat LSU, which is a bigger win. You know, that's a top program that you just beat. And it was really impressive and it gave you this opportunity. But I actually think that they're playing a better football team this Saturday than LSU, especially that version of LSU, you know, with Whit Weeks out. So, like, Texter, I agree with this. Texter says, I actually think this is Vandy's biggest test. They because Missouri plays the same type of game, not exactly the same type of game, but what Missouri does is they run the ball physically, and then they have a quarterback who can really run around and make things happen. So, no, look, it's so if they lose like a close game Saturday, that'll be part of the thing, right? Like, did they handle the moment? It won't necessarily be because they didn't handle the moment. It might just be because a team that's very close, you know, also a playoff contending team, also with a rare opportunity at Missouri, just beat them. But, yeah, you know, it's an absolute fair question. When, especially, you know, game day is different. So Clark Lee's going to be out there and everybody's there. Everybody's talking about him. I mean, this is stuff that
the whole thing's different.
It's absolutely. And it's exciting. And it's so awesome for all of them and for Vanderbilt fans. But, yeah, now you have different challenges that come with that.
Yeah, like, let me be clear. This is not Vanderbilt's biggest test on the field, right? Like, that is and will probably remain Alabama for the rest of the regular season, right? Like, going on the road to Alabama, Missouri is not that. So let's be clear. Like, it's not that. But the circumstances around all of this, I think, are really intriguing heading into this game. Now, my gut tells me, Joe, that Clark Lee – and that staff are really, really good at getting their team to just focus on what's in front of them. And you know, they did that when they were losing games. Now that they're winning games, I think this Vanderbilt team, led by their coach and really specifically led by their quarterback, is not going to sit here and get, like, full of themselves heading into a matchup. Like, it just doesn't seem to be part of their DNA. But again, it's college game day at home for the first time since 2008. Everybody around the country's talking about your program, talking about your quarterback, talking about the job that your coach has done. There's just a lot of attention on you heading into this game. And as a program, you've never dealt with that before. So how do you deal with it heading into this matchup here? Like, can you be ready to go? Is your focus level where it needs to be heading into this matchup? College football coaches worry about this type of stuff all the time. And I'm sure Clark Lee has been talking about it this week with his team.
Yeah, no, for sure. If you know, they obviously have a great, weekly routine. And like you said, I mean, Clark Lee's been able to get them to like come off the mat and give good performances when, it's like a season looks lost or whatever. But yeah, it's still very different when people are talking about the college football playoff. It does remind me a little bit of Indiana last year.
Yeah.
They had some game like they had Michigan come in. I mean, I went up and covered that game, and Michigan wasn't very good, but they're still like a team with a ton of talent. And it was all, in fact, I don't remember if that was game day or not, but either way, there was all this attention, like what the heck is happening with Indiana? And they hung in there and they got it done. But I will say that like Vanderbilt's challenges are certainly more, tougher than what Indiana had last year. Talented but flawed Michigan team until they finally went and lost to Ohio State. I mean, Vanderbilt's got a lot. I will say, though, of course you're right. Alabama on the road is going to be, I mean, that's the toughest game in the schedule. And it's a game that they were about to take the lead in the fourth quarter before Diego Pavia threw an interception. This one is, I really like Missouri. I know. I mean, first of all, Eli, love him or feel like him, feel about him the way Robbie does. He can coach. Like the running, Ahmad Hardy is just a problem, just a physical back. It's just a different kind of challenge. LSU can't run the ball at all. I mean, you could make the case that this game, if Missouri is as good as I think they might be, that this game could be the toughest one before they go to Knoxville. It just kind of depends on, like what is going to happen with Texas in the, and how they're going to play when Vandy goes there. But they're bad on offense. Missouri's good on offense.
Yeah, like Missouri is good on offense. I will say, like I'm interested to see what their passing attack looks like in this game. As much as I'm interested to see, like, can Vanderbilt stop the run, right? Like Vanderbilt, when you look at who they've played to this point in the SEC, they've not really played a team yet that's a great rushing team, right? Like, Jam Miller is a good player, but Alabama has, for whatever reason, just not really been able to run the ball so far this year. And it's been basically Ty Simpson and those receivers, which when you have Ty Simpson and those receivers, yeah, I mean, that's fine. So throw the ball that way. But this is a team in Missouri that runs the football really well and is a physical team. So can Vanderbilt handle that? On the passing attack front for Missouri, Missouri couldn't throw the ball that well against Alabama. Now, that's Alabama. What is it going to look like on the road in this game? That's going to be really interesting to me, what that looks like on that front. Like at this point with Vanderbilt's offense, Joe, until I see somebody stop Vanderbilt's offense, I'm just going to assume that Vanderbilt's offense is going to be able to score some points and move the ball up and down the field. Defensively, I think we're going to find out a lot about Vanderbilt in this game as to whether or not they can stop the run.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the thing. Yeah, the fourth quarter, the Bama, I don't know what the total number was. It was a good number by the end for Bama against Vanderbilt. In the fourth quarter, they faded. They were tired defense, and Bama asserted themselves physically. But for most of the game, yeah, they did. They didn't get a lot done in that way. But this is a different challenge. And then again, a quarterback who, I mean, look, last week, Nussmeier, who I still think is one of the most talented quarterbacks out there, I still think is, he's going to be a prominent draft pick. I guess it's just a matter of, it is a big rest of the year for him and all that stuff. I mean, he's a talented guy. He made a few plays that were ridiculous in that game, getting away from rush, and they got some big plays out of it. But again, he's still a little bit more of a sitting duck guy than this guy that they're about to see, who, of course, Penn State fans all wish that they had picked him over Bo Prabula. I know at one point they also were like watching Will Levis at Kentucky and saying, "We had this dude, and he was, you guys didn't realize he could throw the football." But no, this guy's good. This guy's good. And so the combination of, yeah, that power running game and then what they can do in play action and with him moving around, it's a challenge. I think Vanderbilt's defense is flawed, but there's some really good players on there. I mean, they have talent. It's solid but flawed. And I'm with you. I just think the offense, that's going to lead the way and dictate games for them if they're going to keep this going. And I have to like them in the matchup against Missouri and really just about anybody left on the schedule, except maybe on the road at Texas.
Keith says Joe's predictions are always wrong. Vanderbilt by 50. Doesn't think it's going to be close.
Well, but Keith, you don't know what my prediction is yet. I haven't, you have to wait for
True.
Pigskin Pick'em. But yeah, my predictions are pretty crappy lately. It's a fair point. Pretty freaking bad.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More coming up on Vanderbilt and Missouri. Can Vanderbilt handle the moment with everything in front of them? You got College Game Day. There's a clear path to the college football playoff. Can the Doors handle it? We'll take your thoughts on that. Robbie and Rexro, 102.5 The Game.
Is there a new challenge now in the next step of your program of taking success, like a big win against LSU, the celebration afterwards, moving into this week, embracing game day, and going and doing it again, and maybe again and again?
For me, I caution against, like, when you frame that as for the program, I think there's like a bigger picture connotation there that maybe it's just my inability to think that way. I'm focused solely on this team, this specific team, and what we need from this group. And the challenge of any disappointing result is you can't hold on to it too long. I mean, I think we identified things in that Alabama game that we did not like about how we played. Obviously, they're a really good opponent, but all these teams are going to be good. And so what we want to do is keep our long-term goals in reach. What we want to do is find the potential of this team. And to do that, we need to show a consistency in our process. And by the time we're lining up on Saturday, I really want these guys to have fun. I want them playing loose and free and together. And that's when we're at our best. And when you start to search too hard for those kind of like big picture, the program needs kind of stuff, I think you start to really grip it tight. And I think when you grip it tight, it's hard to breathe and it's hard to play the way we need to play. So we're excited about the challenge Missouri presents. We're excited about the moment we're in our program. I do think we need to enjoy that. And then we need to just pour in to our preparation and have as much fun as we can have on Saturday.
That's Clark Lee earlier this week. Joe, it is kind of amazing when you think about like listening to Clark Lee speak and then going back in time and watching Coach O press conferences, that those guys have the same job. It's pretty incredible. Just like they're both, head coaches in college football.
Yeah, it's quite a wide variety of personalities there.
I mean, they're both beautiful in their own right, right? I love Coach O. I just feel like I get smarter every time I listen to Clark Lee talk.
I just feel like Coach O maybe could be, come in here and coach, at some point coach do a little defensive analyst work or something.
He's looking for either a head coaching job or a defensive line job.
He's
out
there,
which
man.
One it is.
Hey, man, I'm just saying. The guy brings some juice. That dude's in the gym too. So, I mean, it's something to think about, I mean, Clark Lee was obviously a huge part that he got this job because of the job he did as Brian Kelly's defensive coordinator. And I think that if you ranked the SEC coaches in likability, you probably have Clark Lee one. And I know you'd, I know, I think I know, maybe not you. You might have Eli below Brian Kelly, but I think for most people, Brian Kelly would be a solid 16 out of 16.
Oh, Beamer. Yeah. 15 Drinkwitz, 16 Beamer, 14 Kelly.
Wow. That is the kindest ranking of Kelly I think you'll find from anyone around the SEC.
And let me tell you, there's a large gap 14. Between 14 and 15.
Wow, man. Wow.
I can assure you that the gap is closing.
I can't believe I forgot about Beamer there. Yeah.
Well, a lot of people would like to forget about Beamer right now. Turns out he can't coach.
But the point, yeah, you know, those guys work together great, and you know, it's like it's hard to, you know, sometimes it's hard to believe. You know, it's like, how the heck did you like that guy? You know,
yeah.
But no, yeah, I'm seeing Ricky. I'm seeing some of this, you know, on the text line. I feel like, and I don't know if Ricky's a Tennessee fan, but Ricky says no one other than local media, its guests, and Vandy fans think they're going to make the playoff. Well, I mean, I have news for you, Ricky. Like, this is a real thing. I mean, like there's some people who think this is like some fantasy thing or whatever that we're talking about. You know,
Nick Saban.
I got a LinkedIn message. I got a LinkedIn message from somebody like, you know, your giddiness about Vandy will soon be exposed or something. It's like, I'm sorry. Like, their record is what it is. Their ranking is what it is. Their schedule is what it is. If you watch them play, like, they're a legitimately good team. I know some people can't wrap their mind around it, but no, that's not true. Like, it's actually possible. Get used to it.
Particularly if they win this game. Like, right. If you win this game tomorrow, then you are looking at on the road at Texas, which is a challenging game, even though Texas offensively has not been good. They've got a very good defense, as we pointed out, and it's on the road at Texas. And then you have Auburn and Kentucky at home, and they should absolutely win both of those games. Doesn't mean they will, but they absolutely should, based on what we've seen from all these teams this year, which would mean, Joe, that, you know, the Tennessee game at worst for Vanderbilt's, you know, win an end game for the playoff. Like, that's reality. That's what it is if you win this game tomorrow.
And again, they absolutely can lose this game. I'm not going to be shocked if Missouri finds a way to win a close game. I think it's going to be a really good football game. But yeah, that's why game day is coming. You think it's just like local media and they're getting, like, did you notice that ESPN game day is in town? Are they in town because, you know, they just really want to go to Broadway, which apparently, by the way, they wanted to do game day on Broadway. Candace Lee told the Vanderbilt Hustler that, which is good for her for like being like, guys, can we not have everything be centered around Broadway when you come into Nashville?
I thought for sure that's where they were going to put it when they announced they were coming here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good for Vanderbilt to actually have it like on campus. That's where it should be. But yeah, like that's why, excuse me, that's why game day's here, because they are legitimate and they actually do have a real chance. I'm sorry. Sorry, Ricky.
Yeah, like, again, tomorrow's game is massive on that front. Like, you know, when you look at Vanderbilt's team, this is a new era of college football. And Clark Lee, undeniably, doing a great job. But, like, that's what this is. Like, we were talking yesterday at the end of the show, Joe, about Vanderbilt potentially flipping a five-star quarterback Georgia commit.
Right.
That's where we're at in college football right now. It's just it's a different thing. And look, you know, there are people out there that believe that as soon as Diego Pavio walks out the door, that this with Vanderbilt's going to be done and over with and that they'll never be relevant again in the college football playoff conversation. And maybe they're right. I have no idea. I do know this, like Diego Pavio, I think clearly is the biggest part of all this. But go look at Vanderbilt's roster and what they've built. Like, they got SEC lines of scrimmage on the offensive line and defensive line. How many times have we been able to say that? Not very often, man. Like, they got offensive line play and defensive line play that absolutely matches up with other teams around the SEC. It doesn't mean that they're Alabama. It doesn't mean that they're the top of the top in terms of the talent pool that they've got there. But they absolutely, like, this is not college football in 2002. It's a different sport now.
Yeah, and look, Alabama, who now you look at the projections and everything, like, essentially, I know our Austin Mock, the athletic other people, it's like basically right now it's like Ohio State 1 and Alabama 2 in terms of, you know, projecting ahead. And again, doesn't necessarily mean anything, but Bama's turning into an awfully good team, and Vanderbilt turns it over twice in the red zone. You have the fumble, and then you have the pick late, and like they were absolutely lining up with them. They were getting pressure on their quarterback, and they were moving the ball offensively. They have legit dudes up front, and that is the difference. Keith, I want to know how many Tennessee fans feel this way. Keith says, I'm a diehard Vols fan. I'm rooting for Vandy. I hope they win every game until the Vols game. This is great for the sport and the rivalry. I feel like some people feel that way, but I also think some Tennessee fans are sick of hearing about Vanderbilt at this point, right?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Some Tennessee fans definitely are. Like, look, I have already talked myself into Tennessee Vanderbilt at the end of the year for a spot in the college football playoffs. So really anything less than that at this moment, I'll be disappointed by. Like, I've talked myself into it and how much fun it would be, particularly for our radio show, and how we could like not talk about the Titans at all during that week, which would also be great. So yeah, I'm heavily like I'm invested in that now. I need it. Like I need oxygen.
We also have Thanksgiving that week, so like we can really like you know, like not talk about the Titans.
Like, wow, the Titans, are they playing this week? Huh? How about that?
But and I hear that. Now, I also would say if you're a Tennessee fan and it gets to that point, that is a big risk. Like, it's like, my gosh, this huge game. What if Vanderbilt wins this sucker? You know?
Yeah.
Like what an awful loss that would be. I mean, obviously any loss to Vanderbilt's awful for Tennessee, but like to have stakes on it, you know, we're not used to that. Not too often, ever.
615-737-1025, our phone number. We will get back into Vanderbilt and Missouri later in the program as well. We got Pickskin Pick'em coming up at 8:30. Teron Davenport with us at 8 o'clock, talking all things Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, we have heard from Tony Vitello, so we'll give some of his comments that he's made in the aftermath of his decision to join the Giants. And the Predators get a win last night, and there's one player in particular that's playing very well to begin the year that could be a very big deal for this hockey team. We'll get into all that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. DVD with Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan will be broadcasting live at the all-new Circa Sportsbook Kentucky in the Mint Gaming Hall this Monday prior to the Monday Night Football game. Monday night's matchup is the Commanders taking on the Kansas City Chiefs. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rex Road coming up here in just a few minutes at 7:45. Joe, a couple things to get into here. Number one, Tony Vitello has broken his silence. I guess earlier this morning, he spoke with a select group of Vols reporters, and he's put out, you know, just a statement that is just unbelievably lengthy. I mean, just all over the place when it comes to I'll read some of the highlights from him. He said, quote, "By now, you all know I officially accepted a position to babysit Drew Gilbert. Normally, I don't read to y'all, but hopefully I can get through some notes here without any tears." And he goes on to talk about how, like, Saturday, he legitimately didn't know what he was going to do, and that whatever was being reported out there Saturday, he didn't have anything to do with. He talked about the last practice that he was out there and got emotional and choked up over that, and how much he loves Tennessee fans and all this other stuff. He did get at one point talking about his decision as he kind of went through this entire process. He said, you know, the decision was selfish. It was personal reasons. He said, quote, "Again, I've always tried to be a good teammate, but I feel like I made a selfish decision that was one I needed to make. It's the right decision, and I just hope it doesn't give me Lane Kiffin status around here because I feel like I'm a VFL. I think if someone truly invests in being a VFL for any amount of time, they're just that, a Vol for life. That's what I am in my mind." He talked about his message to realtors that keep calling him. And he said, quote, "I'm not going anywhere, so real estate people quit texting me. I'll figure out what I want to do, but whether it's football games, basketball games, supporting these guys in some form or fashion, I'm not going anywhere. I don't know if this will get me in trouble, but in my mind, a goal is to come back to Tennessee in some capacity, whether it's part-time living or some other job way down the road, or maybe I go back to Nashville and become a country singer or something like that. But that's something that stuck out in my head because obviously I feel like this was a great place for me." So Tony Vitello is all over the map in this statement, which is perfectly on brand for him, Joe. But clearly, as he outlines in this very lengthy statement that he gave Tennessee reporters, a decision that he struggled with pretty mightily here when it came to taking the Giants job or staying at Tennessee.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to just have get a nice coffee, maybe a Danish, sit down and just really enjoy every word of this thing. It sounds like maybe it actually can rival the 7 minute opening statement when talking about what a great patriot Noah Webster was.
Yeah,
when he was mad that people asked Blake Burke if the season would be a failure if they didn't make the College World Series. Oh man. Well, it's cool that he's doing that. You don't see it too often, right? Like, yeah. Usually coaches take like a job, either another place, another college job, or they go to the pros or whatever. I mean, typically it's just like a statement. And then they'll talk when they get to the new place in the press conference and say what they want to say. But I'm glad that he gathered those goofballs together and showed what a goofball he can be.
I guess he had like 9 sheets of paper that he was reading off of because he ends it and he says, I didn't do it on quote, I didn't do it on purpose. I'm not David Letterman, but that was 9. So maybe if anyone listens to my rambling, you want to add what 10 is to you, because there's certainly more than 10 for how special of a place this is. And now he's talking about like David Letterman's top 10 list from back in the day. So
I thought maybe he was going with stupid pet tricks, but yeah, now that makes sense. Okay. Yeah. I'm with him. Yeah.
So there, I mean, that's how the press conference with Tony Vitello apparently ended there, or at least the opening statement part of it.
I actually need to find out when the intro presser with the Giants is, and that
October 30th.
October 30th?
That's what it says in this piece that McKee put together on GoVol247.
Okay.
He said that Vitello didn't want to talk any about San Francisco and that he is addressing the media regarding his new job with the Giants next week, October 30th in San Francisco.
There you go. I got to watch it live, man, because it's just like I don't know what's going to happen, but something hilarious is going to happen at that presser. And then again, you get the daily Vitello musings now that he's in MLB every day for an entire summer. There's like Vitello will have an availability. And I think there's a lot of potential here for a lot of fun. And of course, so the Giants fans are either going to be like, this is awesome, this guy is the best, if they win, they're going to love him just like Tennessee fans love him. Or he's going to flame out and like they'll still have like hilarious stories to tell each other about Tony Vitello. It's really kind of a win-win for them.
The Nashville Predators get a win last night, Joe. They win 2-1 against the Vancouver Canucks. Defensively, they looked really good last night. They were awful on defense Tuesday against the Ducks. They looked really good defensively last night. Saros had to make some huge saves in the game, even with how much they clamped down defensively, and he did. By the way, Saros to begin the year, Joe, he's 3-2-2, a .253 goals against, and a .911 save percentage. He's been really good. Like, he has been really good to start the year, which obviously, for if they're going to accomplish anything, not only this year, but over the next few years with that contract, he's got to be really good. Like, he's got to be a big part of it. Now, we're still in the month of October, so we'll see how the rest of the season goes and if he and they can sustain it moving forward. But he has been very good so far, which has been good to see and is a big deal if that's how he's going to play all year long for this team.
Yeah, look, he's had great years with bad starts. So, or I don't know if they're all bad starts, but certainly a little bit shaky. It takes him a little time. So that's a great development for a team that obviously is still struggling to score. But big win last night, and get Cole Smith, scoring some goals. You watch out. But no, I think it's a big deal. Good for him. And Andrew Burnett talking again, it's like last year there was a lot of talking about the defense when we talk about Saros, and he talked about that in terms of why it's good too yesterday, right? And so that'd be my question, is how much of this start would you attribute to the improvements in directly in front of him?
Yeah, I think it's a big part of it. And look, I'll say this, Nick Perbix is good, man. Like, he's Nick Perbix is never going to be like Roman Josi out there or anything. Like, he's not going to blow you away with his skating ability or what he does on offense. He makes a lot of little plays in the game to get them out of trouble that are really good. Like, whether it's chipping the puck out You know, last night he killed like five plays for Vancouver behind the net where he just knocks the puck down and sends it out. Like, he's really good. Now, you know, nobody's going to confuse him for a Norris Trophy contender or anything like that. I don't want to get carried away, but like, he's, you know, they've had a lot of moves that they've made over the last year, year and a half, Joe, that have not worked. And we'll see what Nick Hague looks like when he gets in there, which I don't think he's that far away. But Perbix early on looks pretty darn good out there. So that's been good to see with him and Brady Shea together. Matt Wood got in there last night. I thought he looked good. Yeah. Like, he got in there with on the top line with Forsberg and O'Reilly. And I think he had four shots on goal last night. I have to go back and double check that. But I thought he looked good. Like, you know, he's a big guy. The thing with him is, like, you know, there's always going to be the skating part of his game that you can work on. But he looks a lot better than he did at the end of last year. Like, I think he's gotten a lot better in a very short amount of time, which is good to see. And he's so huge that, like, you don't have to worry about, you know, him getting bullied or anything out there. Like, he's dragging people to the front of the net with him. And frankly, this team needs as many people to get to the front of the net as they possibly can based on their complete inability to score goals right now.
Yeah. I was going to say it gives them a better chance to do one of my favorite hockey terms, get to the hard areas, get to the hard areas. But yeah, no,
right now Cole Smith is outscoring Steven Stamkos. That's not good.
Right. Right. So no, I mean, look, there are some positive developments. You know, I understand, like, Dustin is like another two goal game, it's not getting you anywhere in the playoffs. Well, again, like, our question for this team is, can it hang around and be in contention to sneak into the playoffs, right? I mean, yeah. Talking about anything beyond that right now would I think be kind of silly. So we'd all agree, you know, like, the power play at some point has to, I mean, Brunette already was talking yesterday about, basically, and it absolutely happens, but like, it's early and it's already like you're getting your own head on the power play, you know?
They're absolutely like, there. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's just like, it's amazing how this group of player that would be a problem, but it happens. And doesn't just happen to the Nashville Predators, but hey, better decor, Saros, good start. You know, some of these young guys, I mean, that's what you need. You need some of these young guys who finally it's their time to really, okay, this is a guy who actually is going to, you know, help and be part of the solution. So at least there's some good news over there.
Yeah. I mean, the defense for the most part has been improved, which is good. That'll keep you in some games that last year you just weren't in. Saros has looked good, so that's good. I mean, if you don't start scoring more goals and you don't start scoring on the power play, you're just not going to win with regularity. And Stamkos talked about that the other day. He's like, you can't win games 2-1 on a consistent basis in this league. So at some point, they're going to have to find a way to score more goals than they're scoring right now. And if they can't do it, then they're just not going to be in it by the time, you know, March and April comes around. But in the meantime, as you're trying to find that, as you're trying to get the offense going, can you pull out some points and pull out some wins when you don't have your best stuff offensively? Like, can your defense allow that? Can it keep you in games? And last night, it did. You know, last night, I mean, they outshot Vancouver like 35-21. They were just flat out the better team last night. But they've absolutely gotten some wins and some points this year where their defense has just kept them in it when their offense hasn't done anything out there. So we'll see what happens this weekend. You got LA coming up tomorrow, and you got the Stars coming in on Sunday. So a couple of interesting tests for the Predators in a back-to-back situation coming up this weekend. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexroad.
Oh, I need sources to tell that?
We had a love fest. We all kind of gathered around. We hugged each other.
Born and raised downriver.
Whose head, whose ass are you? Is your head up then?
Oh, can't you see this, Joe? It's inconsistent. You better not have another biscuit. Look at this jerk. Ooga, ooga.
But sometimes I definitely notice my nipples.
It is time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Mr. Rex Road, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you. Some lovely items there to get to. I've got a bit of a smorgasbord here to finish the week. So I got a few things I want to get to and, you know, try to get all worked up about. But first of all, I want to talk about this thing because I don't know the answer. And I intentionally just I just didn't go out looking for the answer. But I saw a lot of Titans media, and starting with Garski, but I saw Terry McCormick, and I think other people too, basically like, so Cam Ward, for anybody who missed this, Cam Ward the other day busted out like a play call. Let's listen to that first.
I want to see y'all repeat this play. And this is an easy one too. YMO, let's just do this one. Let's go gun, deuce right closer, Z-top, fire 6J, rib, boom, F-ship, H-burst on the turn.
No ahead, chance.
This is a base game plan right here. Gun Gen right baffle, 2J Costco white basic.
No chance.
Yeah. Come on, Paul, you gotta be sacked out
there. I love how Karski just immediately gives up, by the way. Did we lose Rex Road?
Looks like it.
All right. We'll see if we can get Rex Road back in there. Yeah, like Kuharski just immediately is like, no chance. No chance.
No chance. Didn't even try.
We're just not even going to try. I think he stopped listening like halfway through the play call. He just gave up. No chance that he's going to figure something out there. You hate to see it. I expect better from Kuharski. You know, I guess there were some Titans. There were some Titans fans that got mad at that, I guess. So I don't really know. Like I think he was joking and like having some fun with the media, but I guess there were some Titans fans that thought that, I don't know, he was being a jerk or something. I think hopefully that was a very select minority of Titans fans that thought that, and that like the majority of people who saw that were like, well, look at Cam Ward out there. Like, I think it's pretty clear that he was having some fun and joking around with the media. So this is what happens though when you lose, Ian. Like, when you're losing.
Yes.
And particularly when you're not playing well, everything you do just gets kind of put under a microscope at that point.
Yeah, then your Zoom gets blown up.
Oh, just back.
Knock the hell off playing. Yeah, great. Let's add that to the freaking rant. Just Zoom just blows up on me. Yeah, that's one of my question is, what a possibly made people mad about? Like, what about that angered people? What is the complaint? Because I see Kuharski, well, people are talking about this, they're wrong. And I'm like, what are they saying? Like, what is the complaint with this? Can anybody tell me?
I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't know.
Yeah, like, I mean, look, there's enough to complain about with the Tennessee Titans. Trust me. As we all know, when you watch the Titans and you've played the last few years, the way that they've played and how they probably are going to continue to play in the future the rest of this year, let's not go looking for things to complain. Advice to everybody. Matter of fact, I'm looking for the opposite. I'm looking for things to have fun with and to make the rest of the season enjoyable and as watchable as possible, knowing that the football part of it is going to be pretty bad. But let's not go out there actively seeking things to get mad about if you're a Titans fan. That would be my advice.
Yes, let's find some sunshine. Okay, so there's one. So, two, I have to address this. So the SEC has publicly basically like bounced this official. You see this?
Yes, I did.
And this is a guy who he was the head official for the Auburn Georgia game that we've talked about, right? Had a lot of stuff in that game that especially angered Auburn fans. Although apparently the one worst call, which I don't care what anybody tells you, I've seen it with my own two eyes. He scored a touchdown before he fumbled, but I can't. That one was the right call. Sure, whatever. But here's the thing. This is a huge problem. So we have all this stuff going on, right? We have all this stuff going on in the NBA now. And again, through all of sports, everybody should know that, first of all, people are trying to fix games. That's not new, but people are trying to fix games, trying to make money off sports results that they can rig, okay? And so, first of all, that's not what I'm saying has anything to do with this. What I'm saying is The SEC needs at some point figure out that you need to be transparent. The SEC needs at some point figure out that when you do things like this and then you don't say anything about it, you don't explain it, people are going to go to the worst possible thing. I don't understand, as much as Greg Sankey talks about all these different things, and he's one of the, you know, he's a primary spokesperson for college sports, how he doesn't understand that public, like, actual transparency in these matters is critical, and it's never been more critical. But they'll just do these things and they'll never tell people what's going on, they'll never explain it, and it's all you're doing is feeding all the people who think everything's a conspiracy. So there's two. Three, I just got kind of related to this. On the NBA front, you know, like Jared on the YouTube channel, like, the NBA is all rigged. That's what some people are going to say now, right? Like, I mean, actually, if you really look at this situation, what Terry Rozier did, it stood out in such a horrific way when you look at some of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, really, this should make you feel better about the NBA not being rigged. And it's good that they got this. And I mean, it's a terrible thing for the NBA, but also, like, I want these things brought to light. But here's a text that has just triggered me. I know we have to move here quickly. And now, of course, it's not coming up. But I'll quickly recap. Someone was like, you know, a year ago I said that the refs are, you know, could be an issue or whatever, and you called me stupid. And now look at all this stuff. And again, Robbie, I mean, how many times have I talked about and usually start yelling into the clouds about officials are the most vulnerable party of all this stuff, especially when they don't make a lot of money, when they aren't full-time employees? That is an investment that has to be made yesterday, and it's an absolutely real thing that people are looking at those people. So again, tie it back to the SEC, and I'm not saying, like, there's no suggestions, but people go there, you know, they go to, okay, so why was this guy cheating, like, for Georgia, right? I mean, transparency. And no, I mean, it's insane to me, with all the money flying around, that no one is saying, guys, if we don't revamp this situation with the officials, which also will have better officiating, by the way, if they're paid more, if this is all they do and they don't have to go back to the hardware store in the off season, right? Like, how much better could that make things? How much more sound could sports be? But no one wants to spend that money. It's insane to me.
Teron Davenport will be with us coming up next. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans and the Colts coming up this weekend. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.